It's time for Twig this week in Google, the Galaxy S3 edition. We'll also talk about Google I.O. and Apple CEO's appearance last night at All Things D. It's a great big show coming up next on Twig.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twig.
Bandwidth for This Week in Google is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. This is Twig, This Week in Google, episode 149, recorded May 30th, 2012. Feminism Wrapped in Bacon. This Week in Google is brought to you by GoToMyPC. Don't tie yourself to the office. Use GoToMyPC to access your work computer anywhere. GoToMyPC from Citrix connects you directly to your office Mac or PC from any other computer and from your iPad and iPhone, too. Sign up for your free 30-day trial today. GoToMyPC.com. Try it free button. Use the offer code TWIG. And by Stamps.com. Use Stamps.com to buy and print real U.S. postage the instant you need it right from your desk. For our special offer, visit Stamps.com, click the radio microphone, and use the offer code TWIG. And by Ford, giving customers the power of choice with a full line of electric and hybrid electric vehicles. Learn more about Ford electric vehicle technologies at Ford.com/technology. It's time for TWIG, This Week in Google. And we have a great team built together for you today to bring you the latest news from the Googleverse, starting with Gina Trapani of smarterware.org.
Hello.
Gina is an author. I don't have her life hacker books, so I brought a stand-in, Games, Diversions, and Pearl Culture. Just pretend.
Yeah, that'll hack your life.
I just pulled this off the shelf. I don't know why I even own this book, but... Good read. Let me tell you.
Pearl culture.
That's why I bought it. Pearl culture. And it's got a flying crazy monkey on the cover or something.
It's got a whole section dedicated to beard grooming.
Does it? It probably does. Neck beard grooming. That's Clay Johnson. Clay A. Johnson, author of The Information Diet at informationdiet.com. We've had him on Triangulation if you want to know more. On the back of his book, it says, I've decided to be much more selective about what information I feed my head. Gina Trapani, project director at Expert Labs.
Clay's my former coworker.
Little log rolling going on here, huh? Awesome.
Clay's my man. He's my man. Come on. We're former cohorts.
Also, Baratunde writes on the back, 80% of Americans suffer from information obesity. That's not true, but it could be. It's time we get a healthier information diet. I love that. It's great to have you back, Clay.
It's great to be here.
Thanks for joining us. And, of course, as long as I'm holding up books, let's hold up Jeff Jarvis's book, Public Parts. Jeff is, of course, a professor of journalism at the City University of New York and the author of a number of books, including What Would Google Do? And this new one, Public Parts.
And I'm going to blame my 10 pounds of added weight on information. Google's fault.
That's it. Your head is stuffed.
Jeff Jarvis's public parts are a healthy part of an information diet.
Oh, dear.
How many diet jokes do you get by you poor guy?
He's made two already, and we just started.
I'm in for the long haul.
He's from Washington, D.C.
I want low-protein information.
I'm all about cutting information carbs. No more processed information for me. Hey, top story isn't really a big top story for normal, but because we are big friends and fans of Kevin Rose, we now know what he's doing at the Google. It was kind of a mystery. Kevin, who founded Dig, he was actually an IT guy at Tech TV when he discovered a major bug in Windows, and we put him on the air on the screensavers. He became the dark tipper and later took over my job. Thanks, Kevin. And then... And then was a regular on Twit for 3 weeks and decided to found Dig Nation. Thanks, Kevin. Kevin and I are old buddies, good friends, and certainly not rivals in any respect. He's done pretty well for himself. In fact, he was on Business Week as a $60 million man.
Oh, well.
Easy come, easy go. Maybe not. I don't know. It might be. If you look at the investments he's made, he of course, founded Revision 3, founded Dig, left both companies to start Milk, M-I-L-K, which was kind of an app incubator. His plan at Milk was to fail fast, to keep creating products and fail fast until he found a hit. He made one, canceled the product, and sold to Google. And now we know what he's doing because he wouldn't tell anybody. Turns out he's a partner at Google's investment arm, Google Ventures. I don't think that's actually what he planned to do somehow, but maybe. It sounded like he was working in products. But this makes sense. I could see why you would leave your own career as an entrepreneur if you could support entrepreneurs. And he's always been like an angel investor. Listen to the companies that he's invested in. And you might think he's probably is the $60 million man. Fab, Foursquare, NG Moco, OMG Pop, Path, Square, Twitter, and Zynga. Not bad.
Not bad.
I would hire him as an venture partner. He was apparently originally a senior product manager at Google Plus, according to Liz Gaines writing in All Things D. And then the rest of his team joined the social team. The Milk deal, according to Liz, was worth $12 million up front with $3 million potential earnout, according to a source involved in the deal. But now he's at Google Ventures.
Which has good people. Rick Clow is there.
I love Rick.
Rick's a great
guy. Rick is wonderful.
Yeah, Rick is great.
Rick started Feedburner.
Yes.
Which was acquired by Google. And that's how Rick got in the game the same way Kevin is, right?
Yeah.
I met Rick on the Dean campaign in 2004.
He worked with the Dean campaign?
Wow. Yeah, he sure
did. I didn't know that.
We should mention Clay was responsible for Dean's digital strategy, right?
I was a software developer. I was his lead programmer. There were other people that were doing what we called on the Dean campaign strategy, but it was really throwing noodles on a wall and seeing which one stuck.
It's kind of interesting that a presidential campaign needs a programmer, but I think that's probably the case.
That'd be a good thing. Yeah. Did you work with Zach Rosen?
Yeah, Zach was in my cube.
Did you write Mitt Romney's iPhone app?
I know how to spell. So,
did you see this?
I think that'd be a great way to sabotage him. You should take credit for it.
It's actually appropriately spelled. It's just Latin. It's Amer CIA. It means love the CIA. And it's a photo-taking app that sends your face to the Central Intelligence Agency.
I have to say, at first I was a little puzzled because I was seeing on Instagram all these people saying, I'm Mitt for America. I'm Mitt Romney. You know, and I thought, this is kind of odd. Why are all these people suddenly coming out as Romney supporters? And then I realized what the problem was. It was misspelled. This is a Romney app they put out for the iPhone. It was an app that would take your photos and add Mitt Romney slogans.
Oh, boy.
To your pictures, including one that was misspelled.
And what it should do is take your picture and make it look like an Etch-A-Sketch did it.
And what's interesting is it's going to take them a while to recoil from that, too, because they got to probably issue a bug fix and go through the App Store process.
Yeah, Apple has to approve it. How did it get past? This is Apple's the company. I don't understand how it got past Apple. This is the company where they were complaining about colors and icons, but they allow AmerCia.
Amercia. They're big fans and supporters of Amercia.
Amercia. Holy cow.
That
was just
the death of the copy editor. As a journalist, I was supposed to insert here how the world has fallen apart with no copy editors.
Well, you know,
America is the greatest country on earth.
There are times when you do wish you had a copy editor. You're right. Now they have to wait. This could take weeks.
You can ask Apple for special consideration. Like you can sort
it's
of
an emergency.
Yeah, you can say it's an emergency bug. I don't know if Apple would consider this an emergency bug. It'll be interesting to see how long it takes to get fixed.
I got to download it right now before it gets fixed.
Get it.
And never update it. It's called With Mitt, which, by the way, is not the most propitious name to begin with. I'm Mitt. In German, that would be Mitt, right?
Mitt.
So there you go. He has a programmer. Is that the kind of thing you were doing for Howard Dean?
I suspect that was probably outsourced.
Outsourced to Taipei or somewhere.
Right.
Maybe Mitt, you should use American-made programs. A better Americia. Yeah. Although you're right, it is kind of a Freudian slip. CIA. I'm downloading it right now. I'm going to take a picture of myself. Get started. Okay. Choose a Mitt message. Take a photo, share with friends. That's one that's America spelled properly. Believe in America. Mitt 2012, day one, job one. I believe. I'm with Mitt. I'm a mom for Mitt.
Oh, what hokum.
Obama isn't working. I stand with Mitt. The America we love.
No, they changed it.
Oh, that's it's a better America. Let me see if I can find
it. It's a better America, yeah.
Believe in America. Maybe they did fix it already. Oh, dang. I think they fixed it.
Oh.
That pisses me off. How dare they fix it before I could download it? So is it, you think it's common that when Howard Dean did it, I mean, he was famous to be like the first internet candidate. He raised all this money from the internet. I mean, it was really a big deal. Was he, do you think, the first candidate to have a staff programmer?
Yeah, I was the first programmer, I think, a real programmer hired by a presidential campaign, to my knowledge.
That's amazing. That was in 2004. That's 8 years ago.
Yep.
Would you guess that they all have programmers and writing apps right now?
They all have some form of digital staff. They either both Romney and Obama have a campaign staff that is digital.
Right.
Somebody told me about half of the Obama campaign staff is actually
digital
staff now.
Well, we talked about this in your interview on Triangulation. I was excited 4 years ago because Obama really reached out to the internet and was very active, and I signed up. I gave him my text message number and stuff, and then he got elected and nothing. It was like, when you go to the White House, they're still running Windows XP. You can't have a Twitter or a Facebook.
You can't use Skype.
You can't use Skype.
Yeah, it's every computer inside of the White House, especially amongst their digital staff, every desk has two computers on it. One that the government gives them, and that computer is used to display a screensaver, and then the computer that the employee brought from home that they use to do work on.
Wow.
Are they allowed to get on the network with the home computer, or are they using Cell?
It's touch and go. I haven't pressed too hard on that because I don't want, it's like pulling the Jenga piece out of the puzzle there could cause the whole thing to collapse. But they just announced some really interesting things this week. They have this sort of digital initiative that Todd Park released. And one thing in it, which I think is really interesting, is this, they call it an easy RFP program. And they're basically trying to reinvent what's called small acquisitions under $150,000, to say, can we make those happen faster, better, cheaper, without companies having to go through the kind of rigmarole that they normally do. And what they're doing is they're trying to find a program manager and two software developers to actually come in and be White House fellows to sort of revamp that process. So I think that's really a really cool step. And that's amongst a whole slew of other projects that they announced along those lines to sort of have a larger innovation program inside of the White House. It's a good thing.
But Leo, I think, back to your point, you're right that if you you have this whole relationship with people out there, you push that, and then you get into office and you don't continue it, it kind of gives lie to the notion that it's a relationship in the campaign. I asked Cameron's video guy in the UK some years ago whether he would continue doing videos because Webb Cameron was really pretty good. He's washing the dishes on video. He did all kinds of things. and the guy said, well, if he didn't continue doing it, it would be cynical what we're doing now.
Right.
So it reveals that rather cynical.
I mean, let's do some contrast here. I mean, 3 years ago, there was no blog on whitehouse.gov.
Right.
3 years ago, no federal agency had a Twitter account. 3 years ago, government, no government agency had a Facebook page, or very few had a Facebook page. You know, these guys, the We the People site is pretty amazing. There's a petition on there now that's getting a whole bunch of traction, saying it looks like the president's going to have to respond, saying we want free access to taxpayer-funded scientific research. That's a big deal. You know, none of this existed 3 years ago. So I think that they're doing the best that they can. I mean, obviously, I'm biased, but the contrasting where we were 3 years ago to where we're at today, it's pretty remarkable.
Yeah, I'll agree. Yes. My favorite moment in campaigns was when Rudy Giuliani made his MySpace page private.
I don't want you to know what I'm drinking. I have to admit, I knew campaign 2012 had launched when I started getting text messages again from President Obama. Because, you know, it was death. It was silence for, it's like a bad boyfriend or girlfriend. It was silence until he wanted me again.
There's rules, right?
So it was like a booty call from the president.
So the president's not allowed to take his text messaging list into the White House with him and say, like, so that has to stay with the Democratic National Committee or the campaign or whatever it is. So there's all kinds of rules and regulations about the assets of everything that make it a little bit trickier.
So I'm being
the White House released a video about it. Was Obama was tweeting. He was answering questions on Twitter. And one of his staff of the White House was explaining to him what the perfect tweet was, which was that, you know, he had tweeted something that was exactly 140 characters. And she was explaining that that's a twoosh, you know, a tweet swoosh, like playing basketball. And he was laughing about it. I mean,
well, that's good.
That's pretty incredible.
He's finally, you know, that was something we were all talking about in 2009, but I'm glad he's caught up. So twoosh. Does anybody even talk about twooshes anymore? Come on.
Well, but, you know.
It was perfect 140 characters, President. Mr. President. POTUS did a twoosh.
He's the twoosh master.
POTUS the twoosh master. He could also catch flies with his bare hands, but that's... So, I like the petition thing. I just wonder, now maybe I'm cynical, but I just feel like nobody's paying attention to these. Here's a good one. We petition the Obama administration to require, this is from the chat room, require free access over the internet to scientific journal articles arising from taxpayer-funded research. It's scandalous how these scientific journals charge tons of money for access to publicly funded research. And
provide no value for it.
Yeah, no value. It's all there. And already they're close to their 25,000, which is... So when you get 25,000, then it's, I don't know, it turns into a pumpkin. I don't know.
When you get to 25,000, the White House has to respond to it.
but really, Clay.
They're going to respond in one way or another. I did one a while ago. I only got 5,000, but it was and more hate mail than I've ever gotten for anything that I've ever done.
What was your petition? Let me use
my Kindle during takeoff and landing.
Yes.
Yes. Oh, yeah, that was a great one. Yes, by the way, that was wonderful.
Yes.
Nobody. I tried really hard to get Alec Baldwin to join in on me. I even did an op-ed in the USA Today, but these people came after me and were like, you're trying to kill us. You're a terrorist.
Oh, come on. The Kindle. Come on.
And it's like, man, yeah, people are really afraid of that. So
well, we know now the people pay attention. The question is, does the White House? And now, come on, Clay, we talked about this in the interview. I kind of gave you a softball on this one because when we talked last, it was your opinion that the only upshot of these petitions is to gather email addresses.
Right. But the White House, that's for the most part. But I haven't seen the White House actually do anything with these emails, right? So I've created a petition. I've signed a few. I've never received an email other than sort of the verify your email address stuff from the White House.
Well, they're not allowed to, right? Because that would be the campaign then that would use it.
No, you can still send – the White House still has a list, and they can, you know, they can send out an email saying, like, check out the latest presidential weekly address or check out the.
I never get that stuff. I only get stuff saying, remember when you gave us money 4 years ago?
That's from the campaign.
Right.
That's the campaign.
I get stuff from the campaign. I never hear from anybody else. Never got a twoosh. No twooshes for me. But I'm not cynical, and I'm just pointing it out. I mean, I would. You know, I know he likes gay marriage, but I don't care. I think this is more important. I know he's our first gay president, but I think this is...
Okay,
I appreciate the acknowledgement,
here.
Leo. No. Thank you.
Speaking of, Speaking of gamers, did anybody see Sergey Brin gently caress Gavin Newsom on television?
I'm pissed. So we've been trying to get anybody from Google on this show, you know, above Matt Cutts. Matt's fine. I love Matt. But we'd like to get an executive like maybe Sergey or Larry or, you know, somebody. No, nothing. They don't even respond to us. But Gavin Newsom on his current channel, which has 4 viewers... not only does he get Sergey wears the glasses and gives Gavin a huge scoop because he's not a tech reporter and lets him wear the glasses. And
I have a homebrew version I made myself.
Yeah, let me see.
All right, hold on.
Very scared now.
Yeah, I'm scared.
He's got the phone taped. And by the way, it's an original Droid, I might add, taped to his glasses.
My wife is 37 weeks pregnant, and she made me go see What to Expect When You're Expecting.
Oh, dear. You
and
needed
this made
that.
The movie yeah. half as good.
Yeah. Half as J-Lo.
Half as bad.
Yeah. yeah. Which half?
Prop comedy here on
I love it.
Google.
You were prepared for that. This is the carrot top yeah. of information policy, I tell you. Wow, I'm impressed. So I don't even, you know, this is the problem. Is Sergey's not going to come on a show like this because then if one of us wears these glasses, we'll have something to say about it. But apparently he swiped them to scroll. Apparently,
I
we don't know.
A gentle caress of the temple.
A gentle caress of the temple. To scroll through the pictures, and then the supposition is the down swipe put the gallery away. He apparently took a picture, but it's not clear how.
That wasn't clear. And also, I don't understand, when he had the glasses over to Newsom, he was still manipulating the cursor pad, but how did he see what was on the screen?
Well, yeah, he had something in his pocket.
It's clear, so it's not projecting. I think it's a clear LCD screen, so... Okay. He could probably see it on. He could just probably see it in reverse on the other side.
I guess we can watch a little
bit
of this.
It was just the
frame. This is from Current TV, the Gavin Newsom show. Gavin is the lieutenant governor of California, so I'm glad that not only is Gavin scooping me, but he's getting paid by the state to do it.
He is really good on Up All Night with Christina Applegate. By the way,
he's got a lot of personality. I've always liked Gavin Newsom. Are we not getting audio on this?
Doesn't he look like Job from Arrested Development?
He does. Oh, I get it. That was the joke. I thought he actually did work on Arrested Development.
Picture of you, and you're making actually eye contact with me in the picture. You know, if I'd whipped out a phone, you know, like this and done this, like it would have been very different.
Yeah. Well, how do I know you're not making that up?
Email it to you afterwards.
So you're able to, literally you're able to see the image you just photographed.
Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah.
Right back on. It reflects on the, let's take a look.
So this is the first non-Google executive to ever wear the glasses.
So you don't have to
somebody
push
says
anything.
The Trey Ratcliffe.
No. There was a prop Google glasses they had at the G+C conference that everybody was wearing, including Trey. I believe those were props.
All right.
These are actually working ones.
There it is.
Or says Gavin Newsom, if we can believe him.
That's a picture. Fascinating.
Here.
That's me. Mm-hmm.
See that?
And you zoom right in.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah. Yeah.
So this is something you guys have been working on at Google for how long?
Yeah, now he's going to ask the hard question.
Been,
so,
exactly.
Thank you, Gavin Newsom, now, for but, nothing. Sergey, I challenge you. Come on this show and show us the glasses. Let me wear the glasses. Just for 5 minutes, was it an Android operating system? I guess he didn't get to control it. I don't know.
If you want to borrow my my homebrew version, you know, I am the talk of the town walking in downtown D.C. with these.
I bet you are.
Like my new Project X glasses.
I dare you to go through an airport to Information Diet X labs. I'm trying to really see the future.
Maybe you know what? This is the hope. We're going to Google I.O. When is that? Next month, Gina?
Yeah, in a couple
27th.
Weeks. Right? The 27th, so the end of next month.
I'm still hoping they'll be under our chair, but Sergey implied in that interview that it wouldn't be till next year at the earliest that we would even
You're going to get a tablet.
Yeah, it sounds like we're going to get a tablet.
You get nothing.
Actually, I think I'm supposed to stay here. I think they're making me stay here.
Really?
Yeah. And Jeff, you're not going after all.
I can't. Family health thing, I'll explain.
That's quite all right. I think Jason Howell's going from our TNT show and All About Android, of course. So will you bring my tablet back? Nexus tablet pops up on the benchmark site. According to Android Police, the tablet named Nexus 7 looks to be a quad-core Tegra 3. 7-inch, much like the Asus, I believe. Is it the Asus that they're saying it's the same
basic? I think it was it Asus who helped build it?
It says manufactured in the device. It says manufactured by Asus. 7-inch, 1280 by 768. That's a nice resolution for 7 inches.
With the Next OS.
Yep. Quad-core A9. Clocked at 1.3 gigahertz. NVIDIA ULA GeForce GPU. Android 4.1J. That's the jelly bean. Peanut butter jelly time. Which actually be interesting. Maybe it's not 5.0, it's 4.1. Not that that matters. What does that matter? Why do we even care?
Priced at $200.
That's what's important.
That's what's important.
Now, that's what the journals said in March.
I'm taping that sucker to the other side of the glasses.
Yeah, there you go. 7 inches is just about right to hide J-Lo's butt. I'm sorry. God, I can't believe I went there. Is she actually expecting, or is that just the name of the movie?
That is the name of the movie.
Okay.
But my wife is expecting. June 19th is the due date, any day now.
Oh, that's great. And you've read the actual book.
No, I don't know how to read.
Oh, that's a
Thanks
great
for
book.
Bringing that up. I don't know how to write.
Of course, that's how you go on an information diet. Illiteracy. Sure. Every future parent. You read that, Jeff, right?
Oh, God, yeah.
What to expect when you're expecting. I don't know how they make a movie out of that. It's, you know.
They only do it for the first kid, though.
Right. Second kid is like, it's not, somebody told me changing a diaper, not exactly a steep learning curve. Or maybe not a shallow learning curve. I guess it would be a quick. Sources speaking to Techno Buffalo, which is apparently a blog of some sort, indicated the tablet would be made by Asus. This is coming from Casey Johnston writing in Ars Technica. Would be priced at $200 and would be announced at Google I.O. Didn't they give us a Galaxy Tab last year, 10.1?
Yep, they did. It was a special Google I.O. edition, though. It was the one that you know, bricks every 3 months, like as a feature.
I gave that to a visitor the other day.
It looks like we'll get the hardware samples of the new device. Yeah. So we'll get the early...
The ones that brick.
Yeah, right.
Hey, you're a developer. Deal with it.
Yeah, I'll tell you. Hey, I mean, the whole point is that they want developers to start making their Android apps tablet sized.
For people who say, hey, it's, you know, you guys are getting free stuff. It's not good free stuff. It's kind of wonky free stuff. It's for developers.
The day that it happens, though, everyone, you can feel the jealousy on the internet. Yeah.
I never got that 4G MiFi card to work, ever. Did you?
Oh, really? Yeah, mine worked for a little while. It expired. You know, it was only a few months.
Maybe that's why. Yeah. I didn't use it, and then it expired.
I'm still getting bills from Sprint from my Evo 4G I got 2 years ago, even though I haven't used it in 6 months.
Well, that's another thing, is if you get a phone, then... Now, do you think there'll be a phone?
I don't think so.
No.
I don't know.
This tablet is more than enough.
Yeah.
The only phone that's coming out is the Samsung... what's it called? Three. The why am I blanking on that?
Three.
Oh, the Galaxy S3. That came out today.
The Galaxy S3.
It came out today, but it's in such limited supply because they got so many pre-orders that it is very difficult to get. I got an email because I ordered one from Expansys, which is they have their fingers in the pie in Britain, and they said they hope that they can get it out to us sometime soon. June 20th, it's believed, will be the ship date in the
what carrier
U.S. I believe it's AT&T T-Mobile. Is it AT&T and T-Mobile, Jason, for the Galaxy S3, AT&T and T-Mobile? All about it. And I don't have Eileen to ask anymore. I have to ask Jason.
Yeah.
AT&T and T-Mobile. Definitely T-Mobile
So when I was in Seoul, I went to the Techno Mart, which is floors of these booths selling stuff.
Yeah.
It's the second largest one. And I thought I was going to buy a note. They were much more expensive there than they are here.
Yeah. Somebody, our IT guy, Russell Tammany, was in Japan, and he said, I didn't buy anything because it was more expensive because the dollar's so weak.
Yeah.
The reason Samsung has is having trouble getting S3s into people's hands today is apparently there was a problem with Pebble Blue. Phone comes in two colors, white and Pebble Blue, and the battery cover of the Pebble Blue didn't match.
I'll take a second.
I don't, you know, you found that out today. It's like they opened the boxes and said, oh, these don't match. Send them back. I don't get it. Now available in the UK, France, Dubai, Saudi Arabia, and some other countries in Europe, the Middle East, and Africa. By July, 145 countries, 296 service providers. They already have pre-orders of 9 million. It is widely agreed this will be the most successful non-iPhone ever.
The features do look pretty good. I was dubious, but when I went through the Samsung site, through the list of features, screen after screen, it's pretty good.
And they have a new pen. It's not the S Pen as it is in the Galaxy Note. It's now the C Pen. I think C? What letter do they pick? C? It's got a good size screen. Pentile, which I'm not crazy about.
It has its Siri.
It does. It comes with a Samsung version of Siri. It comes with a lot of those kind of interesting customizations.
It knows whether you're asleep. If you're chatting,
knows when you're sleeping.
It knows when you're awake. It knows when you've been bad
or good. And Samsung is launching a new music store to compete with iTunes, the Music Hub.
That's what the world needs.
19 million tunes. Yes, we don't have enough.
Another music store. Oh, boy.
The Music Hub is based on technology from M-Spot, which Samsung just acquired. Users can store as well as buy. It's very, you know, it's one of those things like iTunes Match where if they don't have the song, you can upload it. But they do have a lot of songs. It's very much like iTunes Match in that it will scan and match the music but not upload it if they have it. €9 and 99, what is it, pennies? What is a mini euro? 9.99 euros per month.
Make a sense.
Is it cents?
Yeah, it's a cent.
Euro cents. Euro nerd music. In our chat room says euro cent.
Music stores are so 2008. I want app stores. New app stores are the thing today. Yeah.
Oh, that's so 2012.
Yeah, it's true. Well, Samsung
has an
app store.
You know what I think would kill is bookstores online.
you know, what,
too
Samsung,
much information, man. Too much information.
I think the new Apple refrigerator, the iFridge, is going to be huge. Let's start the rumor right
but he
now.
I think he did say he's not going to do a toaster. So we've got some actual news.
Tim Cook said that.
I think so. Yes,
we're going to get to that All Things D interview last night because that was the top story of the year. Frankly, I mean, just was like not for me, but just like the tech journalists went crazy on that.
It's his big coming out, right? Like it's his.
Time. It is, and apparently he held his own. T.J. Kang, Senior Vice President of Samsung Electronics Media Solutions Center, says, with the new Music Hub, we're bringing the joy back to music. Thank you, Samsung.
I wasn't getting enough joy with my music.
I was going to say, my music acquisition has been joyless for so long.
Oh,
like
my God.
Samsung is swooping in here to help out.
That's not too egotistical. We're bringing the joy back. And they say, we're going to put the Music Hub in everything we make, including the refrigerator.
I'm bringing the ecstasy back to books with the information diet, just FYI.
Information X. Just, you know, hydrate or die. That's all I can say. They are going to have a scan and match cloud locker. 100 gigs of storage for unmatched songs. That's a good amount. 19 million songs is as big as any of them, I think. They are going to do radio, Pandora-style radio. They have a recommendation engine that is every bit as good as the Apple Genius. I'm glad they're aiming high. Optimized for mobile, web player. So they didn't have to make this a smart idea. They didn't have to make desktop apps. They just open the website. But you have to have a Galaxy S3 phone. Oh, also, there's Flipboard for Android, and then the first appearance of Flipboard for Android will be on the S3 as well. So
why they've been so? I mean, they make a big deal of being slow and doing it right. Flipboard is one of some people love it, but I haven't used it in a year.
Oh, I use it every day, but you don't use an iPad. Do you use an iPad?
Yeah, I do. Yeah,
it's kind of how I browse my news, and you know they've added audio now, which is kind of cool. You can listen to Fresh Air while you're browsing.
Well, that's interesting.
Yeah. So
oh, I got the new Logitech keyboard for the iPad.
Oh, did you get that? Isn't that nice? The ultra thin cover.
It's nice. It's one thing, right? So it's
we're all buying those, Jeff. Everybody's flipped over those.
It has the magnet, right?
Yep. Ah! Oh Jesus! Ah! Oh God! You need to tape that to your glasses, I think. It's just the right size.
Hey, that looks really cool.
Jeff, you muted your mic. The falling iPad muted you. No, he broke his mic.
Okay, no, it's okay.
Oh, good.
Right. Right back.
Go. Oh, yeah.
Right,
yeah.
So it has a magnet in this. It's supposed to be able to pick it up.
There goes the Logitech sponsorship.
What a brilliant design.
There we go. There we go. I'm going to rebox this thing. So you can pick it up like this, which is nice. The problem is, so there it is closed, right? And now what do I want to do? I want to use this as an iPad. I want to go like this. But then it just goes slippery, slidey. It doesn't go away. That was a really great product to buy.
Well, you certainly demonstrated the slippery, slidey part. Next time. No, I'm not going to say anything. So I got an email from Expansys, which is the British company that I ordered the Galaxy S3. See, now I've said all those things. You realize now I have to have a Galaxy S3 because I have to demonstrate all of this stuff on the show, right?
Right.
That's for IRS purposes. As you may already know, Samsung has delayed the launch of their highly anticipated Galaxy S3. As Samsung has stated, there was a manufacturing issue on the blue units where the battery door color did not match the color of the device itself. As a result, there are only a very small number of white devices being allocated to retailers in Europe, with U.S. allocations to follow.
What did you order?
White.
Blue or white?
White. Thank God I had the good sense not to order the pebble blue, because the pebble blue just looked like gray to me.
Yeah, the white looks nice.
White look, you know, I'm doing all white now. My this year, the year of 2012, white is the new black. Oh my God. And then I'll know. I'm going to have a different color every year. So I'll know. Oh, that was this 2012 pile.
So I wonder what the UI is going to be like with the Samsung Hub.
I have Touch Wiz.
Music player.
Oh, I don't. That's a good question. You mean like for the Music Hub? Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah. Like as the, you know, when you want to buy a song, is it set up so that you immediately go to the Samsung site?
That's a good. Well, let me look on the note. That's a good question. I guess it must be.
Right.
They say it'll work fine with iTunes. I have, because I have the Galaxy Note with 4.0 and TouchWiz 4, I have the Samsung Music app. They call it a Music Hub, in fact. So let me just see if, wow, looks like I've got a new user agreement. Maybe I am getting the special top tracks, new releases. Yeah, this is a store. 7 Digital, this is it. So I guess they turned it on. So, what should I buy? The new Garbage album? I think so.
I feel such joy.
Such joy for me. My joy has come back.
You get a lot of joy when you have to enter your credit card number. I mean, do they have your payment details?
Or? Let's buy it. It's $5 to buy Not Your Kind of People. You have to have a Samsung account.
Oh, jeez.
You have to have a Samsung account. So, take it off of me because I think I made a Samsung account. But I don't want anybody to know that my secret password is string cheese.
So it's basically going to be what Amazon does.
Yeah.
Replace the store with their store.
Yeah. Just what I need, another store. But, you know, what it didn't say is what the format is. I presume it's MP3. Is it AAC? I don't know. And I presume it will work with the, they said it'll work with Amazon Music and all that stuff. Let me see if I got the right password. I've never used my Samsung account. Nope. Well, I'll have to try to remember what that was now. But yeah, that looks like so. There you go. So you don't have to have a. It's here now. Does anybody have a official Samsung, like a Galaxy S2 that they could, can you look on any of the? Just curious. Chat room, have you got the store yet? Look on your. Would you look on your special Google goggles?
No, it's not here.
Yeah, I mean, I've got the Nexus S here, but that's not going to get it.
No, yeah. Anyway, there you go. So Flipboard, and I don't have Flipboard, though, and that you'll have to get a Galaxy S3, at least initially, to use. I like Flipboard. I'm surprised that you, well, it's a little magazine.
No, it's fine. It's fine. I just.
How do you check news? What do you do?
I look, use the New York Times app, and then I go to sites.
I still
see the whole thing.
Do you do? Maybe you're on an information diet.
Yes.
Clay A. Johnson.
I'm starved.
Published by O'Reilly Company. I also use TechMeme. You still use TechMeme? You still go to TechMeme?
Yeah, I don't know. I go to what's their media version?
Mimi Random is good. Media Gazer, yeah. Rather. Yeah. Yeah, I like Media Gazer. Yeah.
Yeah, the woman who does that is very good.
Yeah. We're going to take a break, and we will look at what owned TechMeme this morning when I got up. Tim Cook at the D conference, article after article, bit by bit. Everything he said parsed 1,000 ways from Sunday. We'll let you know what it means. Also, Google Places is gone. I woke up to find Google Places gone, shocked. Google has made it now a part of
Google Plus.
Yes.
Shocking.
Shocking. Oh, dear.
Look forward to discussing that with later.
Yes, I can't wait. First, a word from our friends at Citrix. Gina Trapani is here. Jeff Jarvis, Clay Johnson, author of, in case you didn't know, The Information Diet.
I'm not paying you.
No, I like giving plugs.
Oh, he's good. He's very good at that. I challenge you, though, to make an information diet glasses, Clay.
They're just blacked out. Yeah, there you go. Just like that. Just like that. Brought to you today by Citrix and the fabulous Go to My PC application. The best remote access anywhere. Lets you access your computer, laptop, desktop, Mac, or PC from anything, including besides computers, an iPhone, an iPad, or an Android tablet. How about them apples? And the apps are free. I want you to try it free right now for 30 days. How about that? Visit gotomypc.com. Do it on the computer you want to access. So probably your office computer, right? Log in. You don't need help from IT or anything. It's really straightforward. You can install it in literally under a minute. You don't need to port forward or do anything because it uses NAT traversal, SSL, 128-bit. It's secure. It's easy to use. And then go home or go on the road or don't worry, because if you ever need to access your office computer, you know, the corporate email or those apps that you've got there, any of the special network resources, your OLAP cubes, they're all there. You just log on via iPhone, iPad, Android tablet, laptop, or desktop to gotomypc.com, and boom. You're doing it. You're running it just like you're there. Fast, secure, easy. You got to try this. Visit gotomypc.com. Click the orange Try It Free button. Our offer code is TWIG. And then, by the way, if you're a bigger company, they have corporate versions for multiple users with administrator accounts and so forth, too. It is really fantastic. gotomypc.com, the easiest way to access your computer from anywhere. Secure, most secure, too. IT people love Go to My PC because they don't have to do any work. It just works out of the box. So Tim Cook, they saved it. All Things D conference is going on right now, and it's in the L.A. area, right? It's yeah. Usually it's in New York, isn't it? Is this new?
No.
Oh, it's always
usually
in
West Coast. Yeah. Usually,
oh, okay. So they saved Tim's appearance to the evening, it missed the news cycle for the night, but it certainly caught the morning news cycle. I mean, nonstop. Among other things, we learned that Apple iPhone Facebook integration was not out of the question. He said, I saw Cheryl in the lobby. We're good friends. We're buddies. So maybe Tim Cook has, he said, each company has its own goals. And, of course, that's what makes life interesting. But there's no reason we couldn't work together. He said, stay tuned about Facebook integration, which I thought was kind of interesting.
He also said that they missed the mark on Ping, that like most people didn't like Ping.
He admitted it. He said there are a few people who really like Ping. He also said, and this may be telling, he was talking about Apple TV, but that, you know, we try stuff and if it fails, we kill it. Which is interesting. And the implication being that maybe Ping wasn't the thing. Apple is.
He said Apple doesn't need to be social, which I thought was interesting.
Right. I think he's right. I think that that was a good lesson, a lesson learned, that they don't know how to do it well.
And, Apple is antisocial. I mean, it defines the antisocial company.
Right. Yes. Well, that's really one of the things he said. He said, we're going to double down on secrecy.
Right.
I think that's your next book, Jeff.
Well, every rule I ever write, Apple is the exact opposite. And people say, well, how could that be? And I say, if you're that effing good, you can violate all the rules.
Yeah, only, yes, you're the exception that proves the rule. So, Dan Frommer writing at Read White Web said, well, of course, no new product announcements were made because they've doubled down on secrecy. But the way Cook was acting, his illusions, his commentary about the TV business, and some nervous chair twisting suggested he was hiding something. That's exactly the level of analysis we're getting. Because he's basically said nothing, right?
Right.
He said, stay tuned. We might be doing something with... Well, he didn't... No, wait a minute. He didn't say... Cook gushed about how Apple has great respect for Facebook, how he thinks Apple can do more with the company, and he even laid out a logical explanation justifying why Apple should work with Facebook, and said, stay tuned. So I guess that's kind of really an implication that, yeah, we're going to work with them. When an ABC News journalist, this is all Dan Frommer writing, when an ABC News journalist asked Cook about Ping, Tim said, I don't think we have to own a social network, but does Apple need to be social? Yes. And he gave it as an example how Twitter is integrated into iOS. We tried Ping, and I think the customer voted and said, this isn't something I want to put a lot of energy into.
Well, just like Larry coming back and taking over, one of the things you do is you clean house of things that don't work.
Right. I think Tim showed himself to be a CEO. He can stand on his own. He's rapidly leaving behind the shadow of Steve Jobs.
He said in there that Steve said, "Don't ask what Steve would do." There goes my next book title.
But that's Carmine Gallo's way ahead of you. He's written like 8 books on what would Steve do. It's a little cottage industry on Steve. I think he acquitted himself well. He said the Apple TV business is still not very big, even though it's doubled in sales. That and implied that it probably wouldn't be around a lot longer. The S in iPhone 4S stands for Siri. He confirmed that, like we care. He basically said, we don't have any real strategy for naming. We just make up a name when the time comes along. Kara asked him what the next iPhone was going to be called. He said, and does somebody else have a question? He just kind of passed on that one.
Well, I mean, WWDC is in 11 days, 12
days. We will
days.
Hear a lot at WWDC.
Yeah, I mean, this wasn't his stage, right? This was Kara and Walt's stage. Yeah. I think that, I mean, it's kind of refreshing that he was forthright about things like Ping. I mean, it's not news to anybody that Ping didn't get big uptake. Good for him.
Right.
But, you know, he's going to be owning
Ping
owning
into ThinkUp, Gina?
What's that?
Are you integrating Ping into ThinkUp?
Yeah, no.
No, she's integrating it into Wave.
Yeah. Actually, I think that Tim can be pretty gracious about Facebook at this point, even though, of course, the story this week was that a number of former iPhone engineers had gone to work at Facebook developing a phone. And I'm sure Tim's going, yeah, be my guest. You want to do a phone, Facebook? Go. I don't think that Apple's too threatened by a Facebook phone.
I feel like Facebook making a phone is just a terrible idea.
Yeah.
Like, they're a software company that they should go for all phones. Everybody's got a Facebook app on their phone now.
Absolutely.
They're already in the phone, right?
Right.
Yeah.
The iPhone is a Facebook phone. The Android is a Facebook phone. Like, that's what they need to be worrying about.
Nick Bilton, writing in the New York Times this week, quotes a Facebook employee as saying, quote, Mark is worried that if he doesn't create a mobile phone in the near future, that Facebook will simply be an app on other mobile platforms.
Sounds great.
Yeah, what's wrong with that?
But the funny thing is that Facebook gets a bad rep for its mobile app, which I don't think is bad. Google Plus mobile app, even the one on Android, I don't think is very good. The hilarious thing, not to jump way ahead, but the hilarious thing to me is the company I make the most fun in life actually came up with a decent mobile app today.
What's that?
Guess who it is?
Wait a minute. The company he makes the most? Chipotle? NBC has a good mobile app?
That's bad.
That's good. Yeah. GEC. You know, that's the notes.
Yahoo has a good mobile app.
Who?
Yahoo has a good mobile app.
Oh, Yahoo.
Yep.
That sounded like the NBC chimes.
I know it did because I was trying to do Yahoo.
Oh, boy, that was bad.
I was trying to give you a hint.
So you like the Axis? You like this Axis browser?
Well, on a glance, it's really kind of it rethinks how search operates. I'm at least somebody's even thinking it's the fact that somebody's thinking of Yahoo.
What's really interesting to me is Yahoo doesn't even have search, so I'm presuming this is using Bing.
So, yeah.
Right.
So that's even weirder.
But it's you know, you look up Leo Laporte on what's it called? It starts with an A.
Axis.
Axis, right.
Yeah, here, let's do it. Here, I'll show you. No, I actually like it. I don't know if I will ever launch it because, you know, you already got a browser and it's doing. But as you can see, the first thing that happens, I don't know how well you could see this is on an iPhone, is I looked up Leo Laporte and it puts up thumbnails of all the pages. And it's accurate, by the way, associated with me. These are all accurate. You know, it's got my Twitter feed, Wikipedia, the KFI page, the Twit page, and my personal blog.
Go to Leoville.
Okay.
Click on that.
Yeah. So now it's going to launch it in a browser.
And now you can move down the screen and your search results are still there.
If I scroll down, right.
Right.
That's kind of nice, this thumbnail. You know, you're right. Actually, I'm going to say, yeah, kudos. This is a nice.
All I'm saying is, I'm not sure why mobile is so flummoxing companies as big as Facebook and Google, and that Yahoo of all companies did a decent mobile app. That amazes me.
Well, Yahoo still has some good people there, right? There are a lot of good people there.
So Google does this thumbnail preview in their search results, right? That nice pull down when you choose,
right.
that I really like. But the thumbnail preview, that's not anything too new, right? I mean, Google does it on the web page, on the Google.com web page.
They don't do it on mobile.
But here's the thing, Gina. I think they made it the shtick for mobile so that they used what's appropriate, that a list on mobile isn't as good as something you scroll through.
You swipe, right.
Yeah, you swipe through.
Piece of trivia there. I am the inventor of the patent, the software patent, that, and I did it for Ask Jeeves of thumbnail previews of web pages and search results.
Dude, you ought to be suing.
No, I'm the inventor, not the assignee. The assignee is Ask Jeeves, which probably does not know that they have it.
Ooh.
Until today.
You just created a huge opportunity for whatever remains of Ask.com. So you were an engineer at Ask. That's interesting.
Yeah, I was their syndication and distribution engineer. My job was to take Ask Jeeves search results and put them on weird places like dictionary.com.
Oh, that's neat. So I'm searching for Leo Laporte, and you're saying, Gina, that there's thumbnails. No, I don't.
Pretty sure that Google.
This is the Google app. I don't.
Google added this, or maybe it was. Maybe it's image search. No,
maybe it's in the image search.
No, it did just work for me.
Google does it for image search. They have the thumbnail stuff.
Yeah, you know what you have to do? You have to tap on. So if I'm looking at just regular search results for Leo Laporte, the list of blue links,
and here's
but then
images.
There's a little magnifying glass kind of next to one of the links. If you tap on the magnifying glass, then you can swipe through and preview other web pages. Yeah.
I mean, the thing that Axis does that's good, though, is it makes it so that you don't have to do that, you know, search, look,
right.
Don't find what you want, go back, hit the back button, go, you know, that sort of rinse, lather, repeat stuff. And that's good, but I think it's going to take a lot more than that to really compete with you know, the Safari browser.
Oh, I was ready to just make holy hell fun of them today and say, who, another search engine, another one. Yeah. But I, you know, give them credit where it's due.
And it does sync really well amongst the different platforms too, which is good.
Oh, that's neat.
Yeah.
Well, let's give them credit then. I mean, that's nice. They're doing something.
So back to Facebook and the phone. You know, it's. I think that's a sign of being flummoxed by mobile.
Right.
Well, what's going wrong? Okay, we'll make a phone then.
Right.
This is where I think Facebook should go ahead and buy Foursquare and get some good mobile developers there.
Speaking of which, Places is now Google. So now I have, okay, so
Place.
I have a Twit LLC entry for Places in Google Places. It is now, so now it's no longer in Google Places. It's in Google Plus. It's a Google Plus page.
Yeah. With Marissa Meyer making the announcement.
Oh, because she's
local. Thing.
She's local.
She's local.
And there's a new button in Google Plus that says local.
But not on my browser, it wasn't.
Oh, yeah. It's hidden under More.
I couldn't find
it. I moved it out of More. You know, they have this extra stuff down here. So I moved it out of More and put it up top.
I don't have it there.
You don't have it, huh?
If you just go to plus.google.com/local, you get to it, though.
Yeah, that's what it is.
No, was it, then it made me sign in. Then it did this whole sign in again, bozo.
Right,
thing.
They did
this
do that.
This is so atrocious. I mean, of all the information out there about local places, the thing that Google can do is tell us what restaurants to eat at.
Yeah, that's the main thing I'm getting is restaurants. If I scroll way down, I get bridal shops.
That's the other announcement that came out is that the Zagat is now free.
This I kind of like.
Yeah,
and Zagat's built into this. So if I'm seeing a Chinese restaurants, not Zagat rated. Here's one that's Zagat rated. I could see the Zagat rating for food and overall. And that's, no, it's on my computer. And that's free, yeah. Although they haven't made the app free yet. It's still $10. No. But I think they're going to. I don't know. I mean, but, you know, you don't have to subscribe. I've been paying the $30 a year for Zagat. I love it. It's worth it.
As Matt Cutts said in a tweet to me, the great thing about this is that it'll probably also encourage, being free, more people to contribute.
Right.
And so it'll make the asset more valuable. You know, it's a virtuous circle.
Unfortunately, it is, there are restaurants, bridal stores and stuff, but I don't see anything that would include Twit. So you'd actually then have to do a search for Twit to have it show up here. And here it is. And then when I click on this, we now have a page. Wow, that's our Google Plus page instead of our Places page. And this is all the data that was on Places.
And that happened all automatically, Leo.
Yep.
They took the data
all automatically.
That you had.
Yep.
So, Leo, go to Maps and search for Twit and see how it displays your page now.
That's good. That's a very good idea. Yeah. So let's look for Twit.
That's the most powerful way to get to a Place page.
Right. That's how people are going to do it most of the time. So now I have a link. I got to fix the spelling. And there you go. And it still shows up as a pin at just pretty much exactly as I had set it up for Places. Because, I did the whole Places thing. But now when I click the link, it goes to Google Plus.
So it doesn't change the Maps presentation.
This isn't a huge loss. It's really the same content in a Google Plus format.
And people can like it here. And
now there's a plus one. They can reshare it. They can add pictures. I think this is okay. I could live with this.
It's got a great score. Is that the Zagat score?
Yeah, my Zagat score is 29 out of 30, 29. Baby.
Yeah.
We have the best food here anywhere. 124 reviews. 29 is extraordinary to perfection. How about that?
Boom.
Boom.
I don't know. I'm incredibly disappointed by this because I just, I was in, I was at a conference last week and I gave a talk and I asked the audience, two things in a row. It was in Canada, so they were extra ashamed because the Canadians are extra earnest people to begin with. But so I asked, what is Kim Kardashian's ex-husband's name? And everybody in the room knew the answer. And then I said, what's the child poverty rate in Toronto? And no one knew the answer, right? And part of the reason behind that is because
that was unfair, teacher.
I know, totally unfair. But part of the it's actually 39%. But part of the reason behind that is because People like to hear about the Kardashians more, but another part of the reason...
I don't, by the way, can I just say I don't know the answer to either question.
Oh, I didn't either.
That's great. I don't either. But the
I totally did. I knew the answer. I'll admit it. Anyway, go ahead.
Part of the reason is because we have actually Google is becoming an accomplice to bad news, and the
right.
reason why is because reporters are using Google Trends to find stuff to write to.
Right.
And they have this incredible opportunity with local stuff, especially, to say, here's local information about your community, comma local reporter, comma whatever, that you can actually now write to and actually improve local news a lot by, you know, if you search for Petaluma, California, it should tell you way more than what restaurants to eat at. It should tell you who your representatives are, what the police.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Phone number.
Oh,
is.
Yeah, that would be useful.
What the child obesity rate is. You know, everything about a community. But the fact that the best that the internet can do at telling people about their local communities is what restaurants to eat at or what houses to buy. No wonder we're obese and in debt because we keep eating at restaurants and buying houses.
Well, if I do the new search knowledge graph on Petaluma, California, I do get the Wikipedia link, yeah. And I do get, you know, founded 1858, elevation 29 feet, area, and all that stuff. So I'm getting some information. That's in the search as opposed to the place,
right.
the places thing. According to Marissa Meyer, the recommendations you get in places, the plus places, the new, what do we call it? Local. The new local page come from your friends. So places your friends mentioned, so forth, just for you. So I'm getting recommended places, Mystic Theater, then places from your circles, Lagunitas Brewing Company, then just for you, Dempsey's. I mean, so apparently these recommendations are coming from my friends' recommendations.
So that's where the plus side really does come in, as it makes it social.
Yeah, it's local plus social. It's the plusification of everything, and that's what I don't like. But you raise an interesting point, Clay, which is, but is it? It's not Google's job. In fact, Google's never wanted to be put in the position of deciding what information you should know. It should all be crowdsourced, right? It's what people are interested in.
Yeah, people search for restaurants. Ergo, Google serves up restaurants.
That seems completely fair. In other words, should Google be making an editorial decision about what people should know about?
Well, if Google says that search is akin to the New York Times, which they've said.
Yeah, that's true.
Then yes.
Well, I don't think you want that.
That's the problem, is that you can't have it both ways, Google.
But they do make editorial decisions all the time. That's Matt Cutts' job.
Right. But that they do, the decision they make is algorithmic as opposed to.
And it's based on what we want rather than what they think we should want. And that's the same media prejudice that Eli Pariser brings to this argument of saying, well, you know, I want these gatekeepers, I want these curators, I want these editors, I want them to tell society what they should think. And Google is the opposite of that, and it's a different philosophy, and I kind of like their philosophy.
I feel like what they're doing right now is saying the only thing that's useful about only useful information about a community is what restaurants are there, or what places are there that are popular.
Don't blame Google. That's the audience saying, what do people most search on locally? And the thing I most search on locally, I live in my community. I'm not every day saying, what is the population?
I think this
again?
Is chicken egg.
I'm
chicken
saying, where
egg.
Do I eat?
I think that's chicken and egg. I think that's a chicken and egg argument. Like, you're saying you're using the internet because to do that, because that's the only thing that's there for right now. But, you know, if you look at citydata.com, city-data.com, they rank for every zip code pretty much in the country. If you type in a zip code, they're at the top of the list on Google for most of the zip codes in the country, and it's a ton of data about local communities. And
that's a different job.
Apparently, it's
not a search engine. That's a media data site, and that has a wholly different job. A search engine
come
says,
on. So a search engine site is also, you know, a search engine's job is not is also not to help you book movie tickets, but Google does it, right? I mean,
I'm glad we got rid of the tyranny of editors saying what we should know. I'm very happy to be without that, and I was one.
I'm not suggesting that Google start determining everything about what it is that we should know. I'm suggesting that there's more that people want to know about their local communities than restaurant reviews.
So it's a huge gaping hole. All right. So if it wasn't the case, then
City Data wouldn't be in the, I think they're in the top 1,000 websites in the United States of America. It's a crappy website.
But when you go there, you're sending a signal, this is the kind of information I want.
Yeah, and they're at the top for nearly every zip code.
When people want that particular kind of information, actually, I'm surprised they're at the top because I didn't even know they existed.
So I type in Toronto childhood poverty rate. Third listing is one day ago. The UN ranked Canada 18th out of 35 industrial nations with child poverty rates. Right? If that's what I want to know, Google's going to tell me that.
Sure.
But if I'm looking for pizza...
I guess Clay's point is that the default is pizza.
Because that's what we ask for.
But I think if we all started asking for child poverty rates, wouldn't that start showing up there?
Right. Blame us, not Google.
Right.
Google's a mirror that's putting back, it's trying to intuit our intent and give us what we're going to ask for. And the way it does that is by data.
That's very familiar to me. This is the exact argument I make in the book, and it's an argument I agree with you, Jeff. We are being given what we're asking for.
The premise in TV on media everywhere.
Everywhere. Yeah. That is the case.
Yeah.
And we are in whole agreement there. My only claim here is that as a user of this service, I wish there was more than restaurant reviews. I wish that that a search engine was providing more information to me.
But I think they've just started that. I think
of a local community.
What is it you call that box that brings up the Wikipedia? What's that thing you call that?
The knowledge graph.
Yeah.
Knowledge graph. I think that's their first step in going to where you want them to go, which is that they are serving up stuff you didn't ask for that is canonical knowledge about a topic. And so I think they're headed the way you want them to head.
I think this is exactly why we should give the United Nations more control over the internet so that child poverty stats will come to the top of all Google searches.
Oh, no, it won't. Oh, no, it won't, because governments will say we don't want to put bad news out.
That's a good point. It is, by the way, something the United States House of Representatives is considering. But I can't imagine that that's going to... No.
Yeah, that'll fly in a Republican Congress.
Yeah, I think that's not going to happen.
The Trilateral Commission will next take care of the internet.
Yeah. By the way, the UN conference coming up in December, that's in Dubai. They'll be voting on it then. I think Dubai should be in charge of what's on the internet. Okay. This is the same argument that we get about television. Why is television such crap?
But if you do surveys,
people say, "Oh yeah, I love PBS. I will watch public broadcast." And they don't. They just say they will, and then it's Desperate Housewives of.
You're making my argument for me. In the days when we had nothing but gatekeepers controlling TV, we had three channels. We had Gilligan's Island, which might be cute and campy now, but when it's all you had, kids,
right.
It was awful.
It was pretty bad.
When we got more choice and there was a better chance to listen to what we wanted, we got better quality. More choice yields better quality. It's a paradox.
Well, there's more niches. It's like us. We can do this because digital technology has made it cheap enough. The internet gives us distribution. We could do something that's, you know, defiantly niche that could never be broadcast on mass media because too small an audience.
Yeah.
And there's probably too small an audience for, look, Mad Men, only 1 million people watching, and minus Jeff Jarvis.
I'm not one of them.
And yet it's very culturally important, but I don't think it would make it on broadcast television because the ratings would be too low. Aaron Sorkin's new show is on HBO because it's far too politically charged to be put on the networks. They'd never run it.
Well, and two out of three of his shows have failed on broadcast television, right?
I rest my point.
Studio 60 failed,
which is one of the greatest shows of all time.
Oh.
You hated it?
Oh, no.
Oh, it's a great show.
I actually ran a petition site called SaveStudio60.com.
Clay, I'm with you now. I'm on your side. Throw this Jarvis guy off the show. Doesn't like Mad Men, doesn't like Studio 60.
Beat it, Jarvis.
Beat it. You're on it, TV critic. It's your fault that we got all that crappy TV in the 90s.
To this day. Every once in a while, every 6 months or so, somebody will come up and stir up the fact that I gave Babylon 5 a bad review, and I'm about to get killed for it by saying it with this audience.
No. Oh, I agree with you on that.
I shouldn't have.
Don't go there. No, I didn't like Babylon 5 either. But I am on record as saying science fiction on TV is a bad idea because the budgets are too low. And anyway, but that's, let's not go there. I'm going to get in trouble too. I didn't like the Avengers either. Did you like the Avengers, Gina?
Loved it.
Yeah, see.
It was incredible. It was Joss Whedon. You can't not like Joss Whedon. Yeah. That's awful.
It's not Joss Whedon. Thing. It's Joss Whedon cashing in. Big difference.
You're a sexist.
That's true. You're a sexist and a homophobe. If you don't like Joss Whedon, that's true.
I think Josh should be allowed to marry anybody he wants. All right, we're going to take a break. On that note, God, the sponsors are going, please, Leo, can you have Gina read this ad? Please, Leo, do not endorse our product now. You're giving... No, Leo, no,
cooties.
Don't go there.
Cooties.
I've got cooties. That's true. Buffy the Vampire Slayer wasn't exactly high culture.
What? Okay.
Are you out of your mind?
Now we're going at it because Buffy was a great show. It was a great show. And I know it was low budget and kind of insane, but it was a great show. It was a feminist show. It was an interesting show. It had such a strong following. I love Buffy. I love Buffy. Sort of liked Angel.
Dollhouse
Firefly,
great.
Serenity.
Loved Firefly and Serenity.
Okay. All right. So now we're
in fact,
somewhere.
That actually contradicts my point that TV sci-fi is bad, because that was very good sci-fi on TV.
It was. Dollhouse?
I didn't watch that. I'm not interested.
Dollhouse was a great show.
Sexist.
Dollhouse was a great...
No, Dollhouse was not sexist.
It wasn't?
It was the opposite. It looked sexist, but it wasn't.
It looked sexist. That's why I didn't watch it. Because I'm a champion of females.
It was like feminism wrapped in bacon.
It was feminism wrapped in bacon. Kind of was.
God, that sounds good. I'm going to have to watch Buffy and Dollhouse.
Have you watched Buffy? Have you given Buffy a real effort?
I'm going to admit, I saw the movie.
Which
is horrible.
That was terrible, man.
Truly horrible. Did Joss Whedon have anything to do with the movie? No.
No, Joss, no. You got to watch
he wrote
the
it?
Show. That movie was total.
Okay.
Yes.
And then I think I might have watched the first episode. I should watch it. I'll watch it. It's good. You know what I'm trying to do is I'm saving up stuff for the old age home, because I know that when I get there, there's going to be show like Seinfeld. I haven't seen every episode, so I'm saving it up for when I have time.
All right, Dr. Horrible, you're a musical guy.
I like Dr. Horrible.
I like Dr. Horrible.
No, I think a lot of things Joss Whedon did were good. Okay, never mind. I'm just digging it deeper.
You are. You're digging deep.
This is bad news for you, Leo.
The Avengers had boring bits, admit it.
It was a crappy movie. It was a comic book.
It had fun bits, but it had boring bits.
The fun bits were all Whedon bits, like the Shakespearean moment between Loki and Thor. Now, that was good.
Yeah.
And then Iron Man shows up and says, what is this, Shakespeare? That was good. And that was pure
Hulk,
Whedon.
The Hulk going back and forth, that was good.
Oh, that was the high point.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, the way Hulk treated Loki was a high point.
Exposition up in the sky thing was just...
Oh, God, horrible. Horrible. I didn't even understand it. The humans, we all excuse me, don't and they culture. Okay. That's what it sounded like to me. Austin Ford, kill them. Okay.
It was, I took it to be here are a bunch of really different characters.
They're
I
evil.
Watched all the movies, kind of leading up to it, all the different characters. I mean, the fact that they were able to, have those characters interact in a way that was kind of fun and entertaining and team up. And the dynamics between them I thought were good. There were a few lines that were pure Whedon that I really enjoyed.
Yeah.
Anyway, I'm
and there were moments. What was nice is Joss attempted to write each, like when it was Thor, like this is like the Thor movie, and Robert Downey Jr. really had Iron Man lines, and so
yes.
he was trying to follow the genre, which I thought was kind of an interesting exercise.
Black Widow was great.
Black Widow was very good. Rubber Suit Girl, she was very good.
The interrogation scene was fantastic.
Yeah, that was good. That was total Whedon. Where she says, "I'm interrogating them."
Yeah, I'm interrogating. It's going really well.
And it's going really well. It's like, what? That was class. All right.
That was straight up Buffy right there.
Yeah, 100% of the movie was great.
Straight up Buffy.
100%. Admit it.
All right. Actually, you're right. I'm trying to think of anything bad in the movie, and I can't. So I think you're right. I think I actually enjoyed it.
Boom.
Boom. What a great show that was.
Doing a 360.
Yeah. You turned me around on this one.
Flip flopper.
Yeah. I am a flip flopper. But I'm in charge of Amerisa. So there, or whatever he is.
Amercia.
It's
good for Amercia.
Up with Amercia. Time for an Amercial. Ba-ba-da-bum. Hey, do you go to the post office? Probably to buy stamps, right? Or to bring packages in. Or you know what? I hate going to the post office when I've got to do the international mail thing. You know, you want to mail something to Canada or Australia. I do a lot of mailing to Canada and Australia. And every time I do it, it's like, oh, gosh, I got to fill out the forms and the whole thing and the special postage. You don't have to do it anymore. Stamps.com eliminates the need to go to the post office because everything you need is right here at your desk, your computer, your printer. Your special USB scale, stamps.com, lets you print official U.S. postage and international postage right from your desktop and with your printer, no postage meter. I don't know. It's got to kill Pitney Bowes because you don't need it. You just do it yourself with stamps.com. If you're an Amazon or an eBay seller, you're going to love it. The software integrates with Amazon and eBay, so you don't have to do any writing or labeling or anything. It just prints the whole thing out for you. Exactly the right postage because you got that USB scale for letters, for packages, for anything you're mailing. It is fantastic. If you use QuickBooks, it'll take you're doing invoicing, boom, it's like a button press. And it prints right onto the envelope, by the way, if you want. You can have stickers or, you know, but you can also print the postage right on the envelope. And it looks very professional. It's better than a postage meter. Because you can have, you know, your company logo and stuff. I mean, it's just really great. Look, I want you to check this out. Stamps.com. We've got a great no-risk trial offer. If you go to Stamps.com, you might be suckered into that $80 deal. No, forget it. Click the radio microphone in the upper right-hand corner and use our offer code TWIG, and you're going to get a $110 special offer. It includes $55 in postage coupons, a free digital scale, you get the supply kit, and you get a one-month free trial. All you have to do is pay shipping and handling for the scale. It's a really great deal. I want you to try this right now. Visit stamps.com. Click the radio microphone. Offer code is TWIG. You will never go to the post office again. And you know what? The post office likes it. They give you discounts you can't get at the post office. 21% on up to 21% on express mail, up to 15% on priority mail. You no longer have to bring packages that weigh more than 13 ounces in because stamps.com has the indicia on there, has identifying information. The post office says, this is cool. We trust you. We know who you are. It's just great. I love it. Stamps.com. Offer code TWIG on this one. Please take advantage of that. And try it in your business or your small business or even your home today. I think you'll love it. Saves you money. Microsoft asked Google to remove search results about piracy on the Xbox. Google complied. But good news, if you're looking for Xbox piracy information, there's a search engine called Bing that has it all. They claimed a copyright violation on 500,000, half a million infringing search results. If you use this Google transparency tool, which TechDirt did, they found those links related to pirated Xbox content. Microsoft asked Google to take them down. Google did. But they forgot. I guess they forgot. I guess nobody at Microsoft uses Bing.
Oh.
So anyway, just a tip. If you're looking for Xbox piracy, you know where to go. Gmail was down. I didn't know this. Did anybody have trouble with Gmail?
I missed this.
I have trouble with Gmail every time I click on a message.
I'm bored of that story.
So slow now.
I'm gonna play the grump now.
Okay.
Every time Gmail goes down,
now
people act like it's a story.
See, now that I love Joss Whedon so much, you are the focus of our approbation.
I like the Hulk.
The Hulk. Mark Ruffalo is a great choice for the Hulk.
Make fun of me.
Yeah.
I'm gonna get Don't make Jeff angry.
Yeah. Don't make Jeff angry. He's already pink.
My secret is I'm always angry, especially when Leo says he doesn't like Joss Whedon's work.
No, I didn't say I don't like Joss Whedon's work.
You said you didn't like the Avengers.
The Avengers. I like Joss's work a lot. Actually, you're right, Jeff. This is 0.11% of the users for...
Yeah, I mean, geez, it's, imagine if we did a... Well, of course, we used actually did do a story every time Twitter was down, but...
We used to. We stopped.
We stopped, right? So, you know what? Google's not perfect.
Good news.
Headline. The headline is Gmail was down for 400,000 users. The headline wasn't. Was down for 0.11%.
Yeah, that sounds worse, doesn't it? Yeah. Hey, here's something you don't hear every day. French court backs Google. A court ruled that Google is not responsible for filtering content on YouTube. French broadcaster TF1, which, by the way, broadcasts our friend... what's his name? He's my good, close, personal. Plein Écran. What? Oh, I can't remember his name. I'm so sorry. It's in French, that's why. TF1 wanted damages for copyrighted sports and movies, which were ending up on YouTube. Claimed 141 million euros in damages. They, in turn, ended up paying Google's legal fees to the tune of 80,000 euros. Same thing happened in last year with Daily Motion. So that's good news. Right? The defendant is not responsible in principle for the video content on its site. Only the users of the site are. Google has, this is actually going farther than the DMCA. Google has no obligation to police the content before it's put online as long as it informs users that posting TV, music, concerts, or advertisements without prior consent of the owner is not allowed. Actually, I guess that's similar to the U.S. TF1 is deciding whether to appeal the decision. Did it get quiet in here?
You're
still thinking about Joss Whedon, aren't you?
I'm still thinking about the Avengers. I'm still thinking about all the reasons why Buffy was such an important piece of culture.
I'm going to watch it. No, I didn't. I can't say anything about Buffy. All I knew about it was high school girls murdering vampires. I don't know how good it was. It's not Loic. It's not Patrick. Cedric Grain.
Plein Écran. He was in college, too. As an FYI.
Oh, they were in college, too? It went on for so long, they ended up graduating?
That's right. At the end of the second season, I think.
Yeah, I mean, so the vampires thing is weird, but Joss's whole concept was
I like his
young
writing.
Girl and monster like walk into a back alley funny. And the girl walks out.
Yeah,
you
he's
know?
Funny. I think I saw the pilot. I think I saw the first one. I just, you know.
You can never judge a show on its pilot. Pilots are always terrible.
Yeah, you're right. You're right.
It's always like a caricature of what the show
Right.
becomes eventually.
Sometimes pilots
are great. Pilot of the West Wing, it is absolutely awful.
But the Studio 60 pilot was very good.
Ugh.
Ugh. I have not seen Studio 60, so I don't know.
Oh, it's such a good show. How could you
You're
not
too
like
young
it?
For it, Gina.
No, it's not that long ago. It was recently.
Like 06 or 07?
No, it was a while. I was a critic then, I think.
No.
No,
really?
It was 2000. It was 2005, 2006.
Yeah, it was recent.
I was, it was actually like 2006, 2007. Because I used the Blue State tools to run my petition site, and I got them for free because I was working at Blue State.
So. Oh, that's cool. That's cool. So Aaron Sorkin, by the way, who is we were just talking about because he's got that new news show. Has been tapped to write the Steve Jobs biopic. I don't know if we mentioned that, but remember how critical we were of his treatment of the internet geeks, technology in The Social Network. I wonder if he's the right guy to. He seems to have some antipathy.
He says straight out that he's you know not up to speed on technology. It's not that hard to get up to speed anymore, Aaron.
Yeah.
The good news is that there's a bit more factual source material for. Sorkin to work with here than there was with The Social Network.
He said that he's the way he writes it is as if Jobs is asking to get into heaven.
Oh dear. Oh no.
Oh.
Oh dear.
That sounds terrible. That sounds like a bad idea.
Oh, they're not going to have an angel named Clarence, are they? Oh, geez.
They're not going to. This isn't the Ashton movie, right? So the Ashton movie is a different one.
No, this is a different one. The Ashton movie is just for the early years. We're going to ignore the Ashton movie. Okay. Sorkin, also speaking in All Things D, said, I'm at the earliest possible stage with the Steve Jobs movie adaptation. It'll look more like watching ESPN, which seems to the untrained eye to look like watching college football. It's a process of procrastination where you try to figure out what the movie is about. Walter Isaacson wrote a terrific biography, but in making movies about these kinds of things, it's difficult to shake the cradle-to-grave structure. That's true. He did that with The Social Network, remember? In fact, it's one of the things that discombobulated me a little bit. There was a lot of flash-forward, flashback, because they would do the trial, and then the flashback, and then the trial. He's looking to make an interesting structure instead of just making a good movie. So I'm probably not going to write a cradle-to-grave. Instead, I'll probably identify the point of friction that appeals to me, then approach that. He says he didn't know Jobs. One of his hesitations was that it was a little like writing about the Beatles. There are so many people out there who know him and revere him. It's true. It is a minefield for him. Hopefully when
like
I'm done.
Like Joss Whedon for you, yeah.
Yeah. Now, if Joss Whedon wrote the biopic, that'd be good. Or J.J. Abrams.
You know, Steve Jobs suddenly starts throwing people around in meetings. Yeah.
Right. That'd be the way to put it. Boom, boom, great. Boom, boom, boom.
If it was written by Joss Whedon, it would be told from the point of view of Jobs' daughter.
Right. Actually, that's true.
It's true.
And it'd be interesting.
That one engineer Lisa. Who stood up to him, that one female engineer who basically right. stood up to him in right. the early days.
Right. She Her name was player. Norma Ray, ladies and gentlemen. Interesting. Moving along. Australia also giving Google a pass on the Street View probe. They were thinking about a privacy probe after looking at the U.S. decision not to prosecute. They said, okay.
Ooh.
They dropped the case. Ooh, there's a new Chromebook.
This is interesting.
Yeah,
this is
box.
Very interesting.
It's a Chrome box.
Well, they're both.
They looks have, like they have a Mac Mini.
Yeah, they have a box and a book. The price is still high. The price is still $449.
That's too much because all it is a browser. I don't...
Exactly.
The new interface is really nice, I think. I mean, it's got like a desktop background and Windows.
Oh, all right.
It's got really interesting window management. The problem, it seems, is really that they're really suffering from is still local storage. Like,
well, but they're changing that. You're going to be able to pin. You're going to be able to store documents locally and pin documents to your local machine, so they don't die. It'll have the N number of most recent documents you've had open. And then you can pin documents permanently. And if they can get, you know, offline document usage and offline mail and that kind of stuff, I think the Chromebook starts to become somewhat serious. But of course, then I said that before.
They've replaced
the anything about Google Drive with Chrome OS. Is that it?
Oh, I presume that's built in.
That's
right?
What it is. Yeah. You're pinning things within Drive.
Right.
Okay.
Replacing the Atom processor with a Celeron processor. I'm surprised that's still around.
Yeah. You know? When I heard that too, I was like, really?
Oh, really? Like I guess they had some in a box somewhere. 12.1. Hey, we got some of those Celeron chips in the basement there that we had left over from we could give you some of those cheap. 12.1 inch display, 1280x800, starts up in 7 seconds, weighs 3.3 pounds, 6 hours battery life, $449 for the Wi-Fi only, $549 for Wi-Fi plus 3G.
I'm surprised it doesn't have LTE. That's a little disappointing.
Yeah. Google says it's 2.5 times faster than last year's models. And then the Chrome box, the Mac Mini version, 3.5 times faster because there's no battery issue. That one's cheap, $329. Of course, you need a keyboard, mouse, and monitor. I could see getting a Chrome box for, like, schools and stuff.
Well, yeah, I mean, I was talking to another school about working with them, let's put it that way, and much larger than the one I'm at now. And it occurred to me that we're very close to the point where, as you know, a journalism student, we require ours at CUNY to all get Mac laptops. Every student could use a Chromebook.
Sure.
And you could do all the tasks you do online, right? There's WeVideo, you could edit video online, you could edit photos online, You can certainly obviously do text online. And it's very close to the point where you could legitimately do that and have an incredibly powerful tool for a very low price. So compared to buying a MacBook, $449 ain't bad, but for what you're getting, it still seems high.
It's still kind of high. I wouldn't buy this yet. I still can't get over the whole, it just feels like I'm just, all I'm getting is a web browser, and browsers are free, you know? I think that starting up in 7 seconds, awesome. Not ever having to update my operating system, awesome. But I don't think that that's what people, when they're buying a new computer, are thinking about. Like, how long is it going to start up? I mean, that's the kind of thing that does create friction in your usage over time. But you think, like, how powerful is this thing? What programs can I run on it? And I think getting that message across.
This like, Aura, hey, this effect, browser, I got to update my Chromebook because the Aura, I guess, was pushed out to all the old Chromebooks as well. This is the new windowing interface. This might help a little bit because I think it's not so much that it's a browser. It's just that it's one full window. Maybe if we can have windowing, do you think, Gina, that and the appearance of a desktop, that might make you feel better?
You feel a little bit more like a real computer. I still feel like I'm paying real computer prices for a browser, you know, for
especially
for basically
if Google's coming out
terminal.
with a $200 tablet, right? Like, right. I'd much rather surf the web on a $200 tablet than a $500 laptop.
Yeah, but is this for you? Is this something where you can suddenly have thousands of your employees using the machines?
That's exactly right. I think it's about business and schools, right?
Like, business and schools. Yeah. I agree. Because there you want constrained environments. You don't want them messing around with, you know, playing games. You want security. I have to put Aura. You have to enable the developer channel. I apologize for not having done this. I have a Chromebook in the other room, and I will turn on the developer channel and get an unstable release, and we'll put Aura on there. Next week, I'll show you Aura. It looks pretty good. I mean, I think it's all an optical illusion, but giving you windows and icons at the bottom that say these are your apps might be sufficient.
They're somewhat ironic.
I know.
Yeah.
Well, it looks like
Let's
Linux.
Let's pretend like this is a computer with a desktop.
It's a play computer. My first computer. Google Docs is going to be enhanced so that you can have offline editing, and they're going to bring that back.
Yeah, it's June. That's or critical. End of June is the rumor on that. So that's great.
And then, of course, Google Drive implementation also. I don't know. I think this could be good.
One of the reviews was talking about some of the limitations of this are, you know, you can't, if you're listening to music on it, you've got to sort of hunt down the tab that's playing the music in your browser and then, you know, press the pause button in the browser and stuff like that on your laptop. And, you know, I think we take for granted all the sort of shortcuts we have on our computers now, such that's kind of stuff is going to be really inconvenient for the end user, which is, again, why I think this is really about business and schools, and that's about it. I can see decking out a school in school classrooms, maybe not their computer science labs, whatever of those we have left, but decking out classrooms with Chrome boxes sounds like a good idea.
Well, even better than decking out classrooms with them, deck out students' homes with them.
Right.
And you start to see the one laptop per child philosophy starting to become possible, where you could have a truly powerful machine that has the entire internet with every bloody app and function you could possibly imagine there now available. You know, you start to get that down to a price of $200 or $250. That becomes very, very powerful for education. Extremely powerful, I think.
I think the sad part for me is that they're really not, you know, you're not going to give somebody, they're not tinkering machines, right? Like, I learned how to write code in part because I had a computer that I could tinker with.
Right.
Neither's an Apple, is it, Clay?
I think a Mac is. Sure.
Oh, yeah. In fact, Apple it comes with a free development environment, Ruby, Perl, Python, it's all included. I mean, it's begging you to hack.
Right.
That's why why a lot of developers use Macs.
A Chromebook is not.
Right.
Well, the Chromebook does have that switch.
There's a terminal, right?
Yeah, and you can go in across terminal, and you can play with it a little bit. You can SSH.
There's no language. It's got Bash. Does it have Bash?
About HTML5?
It's called the Chrome show.
So, Gina, try and check out ThinkUp off of GitHub, make some edits, check them back in on Chromebook. I don't think you'll be able to do it and have a decent experience.
But you're speaking as a truck owner. You want your car to be a truck.
Yeah, that's exactly right. But, two things there is one, when we talk about education, for me, what's like a very important thing to me is that we don't have computer science education in schools, and we ought to. And a Chromebook isn't going to help enable that, I don't think, or a Chrome desktop isn't going to help enable that. It's going to be very hard for people to tinker and write code on iPads and Chromebooks.
Yeah, but schools have servers, and you SSH into them, and you play at that command line. You know what I mean? I mean, I code on my iPad. I just bought Diet Coda, which has an SSH client, and it's not on the actual local computer. Hey. But the good thing is,
it's good enough for Bill Gates. His mom held a bake sale so they could timeshare and have a terminal in a closet.
Right. I mean, right. When I was in college, we had partnership with IBM. We had these like terminals
right.
belonging to the IBM mainframe.
God, you're older than I thought.
I know, crazy.
Remember punch cards?
No.
So, last story, and I know you'll all be relieved. It's very exciting. I just went to my Orkut page, and it looks like they're finally moving it over to Google Plus.
Oh, no.
Link your Google Plus and Orkut profiles.
What am I going to do? What are the Brazilian readers of the information diet going to do? How are they going to get in touch with me?
I don't know. Are you on Orkut? Good. Let me add you. Finally, I only have 6 friends here, Clay A. Johnson, Orkut user. Now, here's one problem. I searched for Clay Johnson, and I got Tony Tai, Melissa Meyer, Becca Gillespie. None of these people actually have Clay or Johnson in their name. Oh, there's Melissa Clay. There you go.
There
is that you?
Yeah, that's me with Howard Dean.
With Howard Dean. Oh, that's how old your cut profile is. Jeez.
Look at how young I look. God.
Yeah. Okay. I'm going to say, hi, Clay. I'm going to include you in no group. And there you go. So now when I move to Google Plus, you'll just come right along with me. Oh, boy. That's it. Push all. Basically, this is, we're linking them, baby. That's it for our cut. Bye-bye, Orkut. It's now Google Plus.
The Atlantic did a great piece on how Google should get rid of Google Plus. That Google has created Google Plus in order to get more signals, which is what Jeff has been saying this whole time. But what they should do is take the communities that they already have and sort of nurture them, right? So like Orkut, what was big in Brazil? Is that
Brazil
and India?
I mean, YouTube had a really strong ardent community. Google Reader and like all these little communities are now being sort of taken over by the plusification of everything. They're kind of retrofitting all these existing communities, small communities throughout Google's products into the Google Plus structure, and how that's really a bummer because that's about Google trying to get standardized, structured data from all its communities, so that it could get better signals and provide better search results. And that the argument was like, Facebook makes social tools so that help people connect with one another, right? Google makes a social tool in order to connect with its users better. So it was a really good piece, and it reminded me the Orkut transition.
Facebook
to Google
makes
Plus
everything
me.
Facebooky,
right? Well, I mean, Facebook's whole approach was different, right? Because it was a standalone product. Yeah. But the product was built with the idea of like people should be able to connect and share more efficiently, right? Whereas Google Plus, it's kind of the same mission, but really it's like we want to collect plus ones. We want to know your social graph. We want to be able to give you better signals and get you better content.
I was appalled.
Deliver you better advertisements.
And better advertisements. It's slightly different.
I still like Plus.
I actually like Plus too. I don't know. These stories about how it's a ghost town annoy me. They do.
Yeah, and the New York Times really irritated me yesterday. I'm not going to find it in the flash, but they had a story about something around social, and they just did a parenthetical slap to Google Plus. I know, here it was. It was their Google Chrome story. On my iPad. last thing I read before I got pissed off and I closed it,
and then dropped it.
It says
and
here.
Fumbled it and
stop doing it.
Turned into the Incredible Hulk. And
all right. It's an open question whether the changes are enough to make Chrome, which is also the name of Google's browser, more than a marginal player. But the system is impressive and designed to work seamlessly with Google products like Android phones and the parens still underwhelming and parens Google Plus social network.
Wow.
That's in a news story. And I found that was going over the line. New York Times.
Ha! So much
back,
for the
back up your underwhelming
paper of record. They probably didn't like the Avengers either.
Yeah, that's right.
I'm having too much fun and we've gone way over, so we're going to take a break, come back with our tool tip and number of the week as we wrap things up this week on This Week in Google. But first, a word from our good friends at Ford Motor Company. The Ford Focus Electric is finally here at an EV certified Ford dealer near you. You can find out more about it at Ford.com/technology. Ford was, I admit there were others did electric cars sooner. And I asked Alan Mulally about it, the CEO of Ford, and he said, look, we wanted to do it right. We still wanted to really take our time and think about it so that we could put electric vehicle technology in all of our vehicles across the board. They have plug-in hybrid and all-electric vehicles. The new Focus is out, and it is amazing. I mean, it is best-in-class, most fuel-efficient five-passenger vehicle in America. Best city rating in its class, 110 MPGe. Best-in-class driving range, 76 miles. Charges in 3 to 4 hours on the 240-volt charger. That's the best-in-class. That's actually half the time of the Nissan Leaf. They did it right. They did it best. And now it's here, and I'm so excited. I want you to take a look at the 2012 Focus. You could drive it at a Ford dealer near you. Take a look at the new in-car electronics, the new My Ford Touch and Ford Sync updated just for the Ford Focus Electric. Really, really cool stuff. The dashboard, I mean, the temperature of the battery, the conditioning of the battery. You can precondition to the car with your smartphone. Say, hey, warm it up. I'm about to get in. The mobile app lets you monitor your battery, but also schedule when the charge goes. So you can actually charge it at the lowest rates. Android, Apple, and BlackBerry. I'll tell you what, you're going to be very happy if you get a 2012 Ford Focus. You will be joining the many people now who are just flipping over this thing. Check it out, Ford.com/technology, or drive one in an EV-certified dealer near you. And then next year, early next year, the 2013 Ford Fusion Energy Hybrid Plug-in. Well, we'll talk about that next year. I'm excited about that one.
I can't wait for that. I can't wait for that. I want one.
That's the car. I was going to get the Focus, and I thought, oh, boy, the plug-in would be great.
I need one. I wish they'd do the SUV one because I need four-wheel drive.
Well,
you have connections.
Stay tuned.
Can you make that happen?
Well, what he told me is we're going to – every car we make, eventually every vehicle we make, we'll be able to get it in gas, diesel, electric, hybrid, plug-in hybrid. And it's the same line, and they just change – as demand ramps up for one or the other, this has been the problem all along. Is you build a line for electric vehicles and nobody buys them, what do you do? That's why Chevy stopped production of its Volt, because they made as many as they needed. So what they're doing, it's very smart. They can change minute to minute
really
what they're
smart.
Making. They also know
how to use Facebook.
That's
unlike another company.
Unlike a certain other company, we shall remain.
Oh, by the way, just on that note. So GM dumped Facebook. A story came out this week that said what GM wanted to do was to do one of those huge, obnoxious ad takeovers of all of Facebook.
Sorry.
Gigantic ads, and Facebook said no.
Sorry.
Good for them.
I just want to replace the car key with my phone. I don't ever want to use keys. I can open up the doors to my house with my iPhone now, which is really cool.
I think my car, too.
Let me check that. I bet you could do that. You know, it's a push-button start. That's an interesting idea. I like that. With NFC, you could probably just tap the dashboard.
I see Clay just hitting a button on his face, on his glasses.
It'll make your car easier to steal. There you go. And those glasses, nobody's going to steal those.
Oh, he's turning left.
I just took your picture.
Let me see it. Can you share that with me? Our tip of the week from Gina Trapani.
Google Voice users already know that you can set up different rules depending on what context, who's calling and what contact group they're in. But Google Voice just added two new contact groups, which are automatic and pretty useful. You can say, follow this set of rules for all the people in my contacts. So you can say, play my greeting or forward any call from anybody in my contacts to this phone. And that's just everybody that's already in your contacts list. And you can also set up new rules for anonymous callers. So people who don't, who, you know, that your phone doesn't recognize the phone number. So you can say, don't forward any anonymous callers or give them the standard greeting. So if you go in Google Voice, if you go to settings and in groups, in the groups and circles tab, you'll see those two no groups, anonymous callers and all contacts. And you can set up different call screening, greetings, and forwarding rules for them.
My, I have a call greeting for family members only that says, I love you. Mm-hmm. And Jennifer said, do you say that to everybody? I said, no, I have a very sophisticated phone system. I only love the people I love.
It's one of the best. It's one of the best things about Google Voice. That you can do this. And I really wish that Gmail had this filter. I would love if Gmail said, you know, if I could say, do this with emails, you know, with messages for anybody who is just in my Gmail address book.
Anybody
who I've emailed ever and, you know, in the past, right. I'm going to assume that I want to hear from them, right? So do something special with them. Yeah.
That's a spam. That's kind of a spam filter. I think we're going to have authentication filters where if this person's authenticated, it's good. If not, put them in a suspect folder. And I
just have to get rid of the phone number. As soon as we can get rid of the phone number.
Thank God.
We're.
What would you prefer?
Everybody suggests the next book I should write. I think the next book you should write is The People Diet. Too many people. There's too many people.
There's too many.
That's actually a cookbook.
to serve mankind.
That's for the guy in L.A. who was eating the face. I know, yeah.
Oh, God, don't go there. Oh, ooh. Jeff Jarvis, your number of the week.
Well, I was going to go with 2819, which is the price of Facebook stock at closing today, which, by the way, gets the market cap down to $60 billion and already bumped Zuck off the list of the 40 most rich people in the world. But I'm not going to use that.
Actually, I actually made my Google glasses with sold Facebook shares.
Yeah. Well, there's a report that he didn't tip a waitress in Italy on their honeymoon. I think the problem was he just gave him a share of stock, and by the time she cashed in,
it was only worth $28. Hold on to that. It's going back up. I have faith. This might be a buy signal.
The real number, I think it is. The real number, because I like this a lot, is that Stella's service did a survey of how companies are using Twitter customer service. And out of the top 25 online retailers, Zappos and L.L. Bean are the most responsive on Twitter, answering 100% of customer tweets within 24 hours.
Wow, that's amazing.
It's really impressive, I think. Other top performers included Overstock at 98%, Dell, my old friends at Dell, at 98%. Oh, how they learn wonderfully. And Best Buy at 89%.
My tool of the week, I'll just go quickly. We already showed it on the iPhone. Finally, Android has the Google Plus app that I... Now, you said you don't like this, Jeff, but I think it's just spectacular. What it really does is highlights how good images look. So it's pro images. But I think this is just a beautiful app, and I think they did a nice job on Android. It especially looks good on a Galaxy Note on that big format. If you haven't updated your Google Plus app, Android or iPhone, might be worth doing.
I like how when you swipe up, the bottom posts kind of fly in.
Isn't that elegant? Yeah.
It's a really nice, it's a nice effect.
It's so elegant. Look, I'm watching a Hangout right here. That's exciting. Yeah, I think they've done a nice job of it. Anyway, that's... That is the somehow I've gotten to YouTube. Oh, it's because I joined a Hangout. That's the new Google Plus app. Very nice. Very nice indeed. All right. We're out of time. Way out of time. Thank you for being here. We enjoyed doing this show so much that we made it longer. Gina Trapani is the author of a great application, thinkupapp.com, and at smarterware.org. That's her blog. She's on Google Plus, of course. How could she not be? Jeff Jarvis, the author of Public Parts, available in your better bookstores right now. You must read it.
I hope it is. God knows.
Not remaindered yet. Publishers. From Simon & Schuster. And we really want to thank Clay A. Johnson for joining us. It was really nice to have you again, Clay. Thank you for being
here. Clay. It was great to be here.
InformationDiet.com.
I love doing this, so...
Good, we'll have you back.
You don't even have to...
Anybody who has props can come back.
I know, that's preparation.
That's...
And soon, cute baby.
Oh, yeah, good luck.
Yeah.
The 3 weeks and counting. How exciting. I'm just glad it didn't happen during the show.
Yeah, that's great. That's really great. Congratulations to you both. Thanks, Clay. Coming up, TNT, the Tech News Today. Right after Tech News Today, it's Rob Reed will be joining us on triangulation. Rob, of course, the founder of Rhapsody and Listen, but he got a lot of notoriety lately for his TED Talk on copyright math. Really going to be a lot of fun. Rob Reed coming up later today. Thanks, everybody, for joining us. We do This Week in Google every Wednesday, 1 p.m. Pacific, 4 p.m. Eastern time. Let's see, that would be 2000 UTC on twit.tv, but you can get the show after the fact. We offer audio and video for download at twit.tv and wherever better podcasts are aggregated. I'm Leo Laporte. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you next time on Twig. Do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do